Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I am actually really excited. I am on Zoom right now with Peter. And Peter, you want to say your last name for me?
Scott Ezer.
Right, so now everyone understands why I'm not even trying. But Peter made, oh my goodness, his film, The Passerby, was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021. And it took home the award for Outstanding Short Film Animation. And you also won Outstanding Screenplay Animation. And honestly, it is, you know, just you'll have to listen to me praise you a lot. You made a masterpiece. I watched The Passerby. Thanks. You know, I absolutely could not get enough of The Passerby. And by the way, my wife, she adores animation. So all I had to do was say, I'm talking to the guy who made Passerby in like an hour. And she's like, oh, my God, tell him it's amazing. Because honestly, it is a masterpiece. It is. I watched it again after, you know, having, you know, about a year break from it. And even better than I remembered from the unbelievable. I mean, it starts off with it's just the most beautiful animation. I just think it's the most beautiful film to look at. And then you actually hit us with an amazing story that I was so glad to see you got Outstanding Screenplay, because it's such innovative storytelling. You know, I don't mean to put down other animators, but sometimes when animators or directors working with animation just have a beautiful look, it's just a beautiful looking film. And, you know, they know they don't even have to bother with like a story that no one's ever heard before, that is an analogy of how human beings go through life not noticing the things are passing by, you know, like most. And I understand, because oh my God, how hard is animation anyway? So anyway, that is my introduction, in which I am telling Peter that I just think, like, I am not lying to you when I say that, and I hope you'll correct me, but like, your film should have been nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Short. Because I can promise you, every year I watch the nominees, and I don't know why, because, boy, those Oscar short nominations, I am aware, like, we've had films at our festivals that, you know, they email me and they're like, hey, we're in the running, blah, blah, blah. You know, we made the list of top 50. And it's just because, like, they hire a special publicist who knows people at the Academy. And
maybe, yeah.
I guess that's really what it is, because there's a few thousand short films made every year. So how is the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences supposed to actually see them all and choose the actual top 20 that were made? You know, it's the top 20 that are connected to them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's a weird thing, awards, I think.
Yeah, because you don't make the film for awards, right?
Exactly.
But it's
sometimes
also
even
kind of nice.
Sometimes you win awards for films that I've made that won a lot of awards, for example, and I didn't like it. I think it's my least favorite film of mine, and it kind of bugs me. I'd rather not have won those awards. So
should I rest easy that you're proud of The Passerby?
I'm pretty proud of The Passerby. Yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I should shift gears back to away from The Passerby for now, because you're. Thank you, Peter is one of the rare guests on this podcast who sent me an email and said, I've been listening to the podcast, and I like sometimes people just come on here and they've never heard it, and I understand life is short and not everyone has a lot of time, but of course, I'm going to ask you the question I start with everyone, which is, you know, I see this film you've made that I think is just absolutely brilliant. What got you to this point? How old were you when you got interested in the medium? Were you interested in writing or filmmaking, or has it always been animation? You know, because I always find it interesting when people are in animation, because the question is, did they start with the visual arts? But sometimes it's just someone who like was making live action films and just discovered a love for animation. So I'm curious what your path was.
Well, mine was actually, I wanted to be a comic book artist. So I drew a lot of comics when I was young. I actually drew a lot of comic versions of my favorite movies. Like I made, like when I was really young, I made like 10 comics based on Jaws, for example. Just like very short but fun little comics. And that was what I wanted to be. So I already loved drawing. And at a certain age, I think it's very difficult for me to pinpoint when it started, but my love for cinema just grew. I went to movies. I when I did my first summer job, for example, I used the money not to go on a holiday or buy a motorcycle. I bought a Laserdisc player, which at that time was a big thing. And so that's already a hint that I loved movies. But I was never really enamored with animation per se. Like I was just a movie buff that loved live action films, and animation was just kind of a mathematical sum. Like I love movies, I love to draw equals animation.
Well, and I'll add, when you share that when you were young you loved comic books and graphic novels, and you would do your own graphic novel adaptations of cinema you loved. Yeah. That's storyboarding. That might be storyboarding after the fact, but that, exactly. I mean, you were just learning the skill of designing a film.
Exactly. I've never really thought about it that way, but you could see it as that indeed. Like I took back when I was very young, there were no, there were probably VHS players, but we didn't have one. So I just kind of took the film home with me and just drew what I remembered. And I think that's probably a very good way to, yeah, learn the storyboards.
So how, at what age did it start to come together?
Well, I think at 18, I started doing an animation class here in my city in Kent. And that's when it really kind of clicked. Like I love this so much. Also, I think in animation, a lot of things are not explored in animation. Like live action, you have all these kind of different movements, different styles. Italian neorealism, you have like the American cinema of the 70s, all these different things. And then in animation, I was always seeing the same things over and over and over again. There was, I'm talking about feature films, not really short films, which were more experimental.
Especially right with, because there's only two sources really for and there it's either, well, now it used to be Pixar or Disney, but they dominate in the US, and then, you know, there's wonderful stuff out of Japan if people discover it. But otherwise, there's very little animation directed at adults. Or other ages, even though they do a pretty good job often of making it appeal to adults too. But it's often has childish elements.
It's either like, I would call them family movies, like the kind of movies that you could watch with the whole family. But like the really more edgy, I guess is the word, things I did not see. And I was interested in exploring these things. Like, can you do something that's a little bit more quote unquote experimental in animation and at the same time tell a story? That was something I was always interested in.
Right. So you were interested in pushing the boundaries of the visual side.
Both visual, but also I guess looking for the, I guess I was just looking for the mature audience, like where, does that exist even, like an audience, like a cinephile audience for animation? Does that exist? It's a very small audience, but they do.
It may be, although it's funny. I guess I'm revealing something about myself, which is two animated films that I've always loved, both from almost the same era, is The Beatles' Yellow Submarine, which I just find visually... Yep. I just discovered it as a Beatles fan at age 5. In fact, it made me a Beatles fan at age 5. and then the film out of France, Fantastic Planet.
Oh yes, that's an amazing one.
And it's just so visually stunning, and the story is just out of this world. And
it's insane.
And with the exception of Bakshi films or whatever that were like Lord of the Ringsy or whatever, Those are the only two I can even name where it was like a feature film made for a mature audience that would appreciate just something that's visually stunning in an artistic way.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And those are actually two of my favorites. And I think it's somewhat of a shame that not more of these films are made, like films that have a visually distinct style and that tell a mature story. It must be possible, I think. And maybe it will be possible in the future, because animation is getting cheaper. I think it's a question of money, because it's so expensive. We need to get the whole family to the cinema. And, putting all that money into something which is just for a mature audience is maybe a little bit risky. I think that is the main reason, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear. Yeah, it is obvious. It's obvious that tools are getting less expensive. So yes. That is promising. But so when you started off, were you just doing everything by hand, like 24 frames a second, or did you start off with digital, with computers?
Well, I'm old enough to have still used animation cells, actually, like the plastic cells, which were painted with special paint and everything. So really under a 35 millimeter camera, my graduation film is the last film shot on film in that school, actually. I made
Wow.
That. So and after
you
go that, to,
they, oh, I did not mention, I mentioned we were on Zoom. Yes. I guess when we started about 10, 15 minutes ago, and I did not mention that you are in Brussels, Belgium.
I'm actually in Kent, which is about 30 minutes by car from
30 minutes.
Brussels.
I'm just looking at IMDb. IMDb claims, yeah. Bro.
Okay. I have nothing to do with IMDb. They just put,
oh, that's right. Someone. Yeah, that's right. That other company submitted. Well, anyhow. So you're in Belgium.
Yes.
So did you go to university there? Did you go outside?
I went to art school, specializing in animation. So that was a 4-year course. And
Yeah. So you knew exactly what you were interested in.
I knew exactly what I was interested in. Yes. Even though I always felt a little bit out of place, like I said, because most people in my class loved the cartoony, broad comedy films. And I wasn't like that. It almost sounds pretentious, but it was like that. I mean, I had a different taste. So I felt a little bit out of place, but at the same time, I knew that that was what I wanted to explore, you know, animation.
Right, because you were bringing a fine art aesthetic to it.
Yes. Which has been done before, but there's a great Russian animator called Yuri Norstein. I don't know if you know him, who made like Hedgehog in the Fog and very, very beautiful painterly animation. He was a big inspiration for me. So.
Excellent. And so cool that you started, I think we're probably close in age, but it's very cool that you started. I imagine you might, I can trick myself and I can extrapolate that you, because you started because your thesis film was essentially, you know, cell by cell painted on and then shot with a 35 millimeter camera,
yeah,
frame by frame.
Yes.
That's gotta be one reason why your work, and actually the only thing I've seen of yours so far is The Passerby, but now that I know there's more, I'm probably going to ask you for links, but
I'll give them to you too.
But it certainly, the textures and you know, they both, your characters look like paintings, but they also look like China dolls with texture, like physical texture, I just find,
it's a technique I've been using since 2003, actually, when I made my graduation film, and I never deviated from it. Of course, it's been developed. When you see my graduation film, you can recognize the style, but it's still in a very kind of basic state. But it's a style that I've always kind of loved. I loved, like you said, the texture of it. I use acrylic paint, actually, and I mix it with sand to give it that texture. And so I'm continuously trying to find new ways to do it. I'm working on a new film right now, which is also kind of an evolution from that graphical style. I mean, it's a little bit more refined than, yeah, I'm constantly looking for the perfect, I guess, MO.
And it's, well, so wait, did you, after graduation, what did you do next? And I guess I also want to just add, well, I should just let you answer that. But the follow-up, when you, after you answer that, if you want to have it in the back of your mind, is have you, are you still doing a lot of by hand, or have you shifted into creating with digital tools? So first, what happened right after you finished that first film, or not first film, but that when you graduated?
Well, the week of my graduation, a producer came to speak at our school, and he had a project. He was looking for animators for a project, which was kind of a, what do you call it in English? Like several short films that are, that have one common theme. It was short films based on Belgian poetry. So there were like 10 poems that needed to be, you know, translated into short little films. It was a project he was doing, and he was kind of looking to find people who were interested. I was interested. I got selected for this project. So right after, like, I think 2 or 3 weeks after graduation, I could immediately start this project, which was a funded project, professional project. So I got some money from it.
Very nice. So he wasn't someone who goes, oh, if I go to the school, I can find a bunch of kids to work for almost nothing. He actually paid.
There was a small budget, but ideal for kids who just graduated. And he's still my producer, basically. He's the one who produced the Bastardized. So.
Or was that, because I know the, I remember the soil and
yes.
And he,
Sight
he,
of an ignored landscape. That's the.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, so you did that. And that, so then you, how fortunate you just hit the ground running as a, as an animator.
Yeah, actually, yes. And after that, like, I just keep each time I had an idea, I would propose it to him, and then we would kind of try to develop it and ask for funding and get it and just start a new film and so on and so on. And of course, I had to also do other jobs to compensate for.
Yeah, I was going to ask, were there like commercials or other kinds of things?
Yeah, I've done some basic animation things, not in my style, but just people who gave me graphics and I had to animate them for you know, commercials. Yeah. Or
yeah, so you're able to do both. You can do the things that are for you, and then you do the things that are the term is gig, right? They're paid gigs.
They're gigs, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And thank goodness they're there, right? Because thank artists need there, food and shelter.
They need food. They need shelter, just like anybody else. Yes.
I know. I wish, you know, there is no, and I, you told me before we started recording how Belgium is very good at supporting the arts, the cinematic arts.
They're actually really, really good. Yeah. They really give you, I mean, of course you have to write a script and it has to be approved, but if it's approved, you get like a chance to work with the best DPs, the best sound designers, the best, like the top of the line. It's like really just a professional film, but just in a short format. So it's really great. Yeah, I think
wow, that's incredible. So filmmakers listening, you made a mistake not being born in Belgium, because I said to Peter before we started recording that we at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival and Film Invasion Los Angeles, the two festivals I program, a surprising number of. Well, and by the way, I'm not saying we get 20 films from Belgium, but I'm saying when we get three incredible films. Whereas Belgium's neighbors to the south, you know, and the, you know, we'll get a bunch of stuff from France and it'll be like 1 out of 5 is good. Not to knock on France, but it's obviously, you know, maybe they're getting less support and, you know, it's harder to do it, but just shockingly, cause you know, an ignorant American doesn't walk around going, boy, the Flemish are really good at cinema. I wish we knew. Well, I wish we knew.
I think it's Belgium and also Denmark. I think Denmark is even kind of supports even more, I think. They're really, yeah. I mean,
I tell you, when I've been lucky enough to travel, those are the parts of the world I enjoy most. I Denmark and I actually have not been to Brussels, but because my ex-wife had been there before I got to travel with her. So, but
I'm not a big fan of Brussels. There are nicer places in Belgium. Yeah,
where's a? I mean, because of film, there's always Bruges. But what's? Well, no, I'll ask you.
Where Bruges? Yeah, why not?
Why not? Why not Bruges? Visit Bruges?
I would go to Bruges. Yeah, it's a small, but the center is really nice. It's like in the film in Bruges.
Yeah, and I tell every silly American who barely travels and thinks they just want to go to London and Paris, I'm like, if you don't go to Copenhagen, you're a fool. Just go. It's if you could lift that city up and drop it in a warm climate, I would move tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly the same, except for the warm climate. I'm more of a fall, autumn kind of guy than it. But it's hands down my favorite city I've ever been to, Copenhagen.
Me too. Me too. I could not believe how unbelievably pleasant life is, even just to visit there. It's
amazing.
A better way of living.
Definitely. And the people are so relaxed. They're so chill. You never see anybody hurrying. It's like, and everybody's so welcoming. It's great.
And you can walk everywhere and you can take, it's the sub, the underground is so clean that you could, I always joke that like, you could just sit down and have a picnic sit on the ground of the subway station. And it's so clean. It's cleaner than your kitchen at home. But anyway, we don't have to talk about how much I feel even more bonded to you that we both love Copenhagen. So with this producer, you were able to just continually expand your craft and make more and more short animation films.
I mean, after the poetry project, I did a second short film, then a third one, and I think then I made a couple of shorter films. Not all the films I did with my producer. I also did some kind of short films, like in a couple of days. And then the passerby, and now I'm doing another one. So it's an amazing relationship. Very open. He's brutally honest, which is also great.
And when you're thinking about what to do next, is it the visual idea or is it the story idea or can it be either?
It depends. The film that I'm doing next, or that I hope to do next, is based on a novella. So there, it's just I wrote this. I didn't write it. I read this thing and I thought this is amazing. I just saw the visuals in my head and I immediately contacted him and said, "This is. I need to do this." So we got the rights to this novella and. So that's one way of doing it. The other, the passerby, I won't spoil too much about the passerby, but it was based on something that I witnessed when I was younger. So the thing that happened is something that I saw when I was younger. And I had the idea, I think, to do a film about it more than 10 years ago, I guess. But I was waiting to find the right form to tell this story because without the right form, I think this story wouldn't work.
I can't imagine it being in any other form. It's just so, all right, so should we narrow in on passerby now?
Yeah, since, you can.
Since this is my makeup, because I don't believe we got to do a Q&A when your film was in the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year. In 2021, we didn't do a Q&A. So like, I'm like, okay, I get to talk to Peter. I get to really dive into the, because... I mean, besides my introduction praise, I just think it's so innovative and, you know, just, and more so than most animation, it feels like cinema. I feel like the way that we travel back and forth along that street and get to know it is just so visually, I don't even know if I have words for it, but I just find it brilliant. And the storytelling is shocking and the plot twists and the plot points are significant. I mean, my goodness. So I guess I'm giving you a golf clap. I'm praising you for, because often in short films, right? In short films, sometimes it's just an idea, but this is a fully fleshed out 3-act story.
Yes, yes. It follows a very classical React structure.
It does. And you're showing you can tell your story in a classical structure while being remarkably innovative with the way it's told.
I guess so. I'm blushing for the praise. Thanks for that.
Sorry. I'm gonna have to lay it on thick because it's my chance.
This is one of those things where just kind of thinking about it. And the thing is this, I saw this thing happening when I was in a car, which you could compare with like sitting, I was the lens watching it. I was the camera watching this thing. So at a certain point, I thought, this is just the way I have to do it. I cannot. That middle section of the film, I cannot cut it. There is just no way I can cut from, you know, in time, it has to be real time. Life continues. There's this tragedy in the middle of it, but the world goes on.
And did you have the vision to have like the depth? Because the depth perception, I mean, it feels... We feel, you know, 3 or 4 stages of depth, I think, on screen.
Yes. Yeah.
And yet it has this beautiful 2D feel.
I wanted to have that 2D feel because the first professional short film I made after the poetry project was actually 3D. They were 3D models with my textures on them. And while you have more freedom of movement, or the characters have more freedom of movement, it never felt quite right. So I wanted to go back to something that was 2D. And this is basically classic cutout animation, of course, composited in 3D, in a 3D space. But pretty terrible to render out. I can tell you that it took about a day to render out.
And you do all the work and then you hit return, and then you wait a day to see if it comes out okay without crashing.
Exactly, and then you see a little mistake, but the files were so heavy that I couldn't review the mistake in real time. So I had to try to fix the mistake and then hit that button again and wait another day. So it was pretty terrible, but I think I got there. So.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And so interesting to know that the genesis of the story was you watching it from a car, because, I mean, I just can't praise your story enough of the second young man going by, and that the story becomes about him as an observer, emotionally touched by what he saw, but focused on his current task. And I won't give away what his task is, I suppose. If and when there's a place for people to watch it, obviously I'll be happy to put a link in the show notes. I know for now it's not going to join the Discovery Indie Film TV series right away, but it's always an option for you if you ever want it, because I just, you know, I wish everyone in the world could see this darn movie because it's so, so gorgeous. But that second boy, he truly is us. And by the way, exactly. I also want to add, even though there's a lot of tragedy, there's a lot of humor.
Yes. Like this is all part of exactly. But this was also, I was thinking of things to make the parts that are away from the tragedy interesting somehow. So I was constantly thinking that there's a dog, there's people playing football, there's a guy washing his car, there's all these things that just go on unaffected by this tragedy in the middle of this street. And so it was a challenge to time those things and to do the zoom ins, zoom outs. That was all very carefully timed.
Was that at the script level you were working all this out, or did you start animating and learn what you needed to do?
As a matter of fact, normally when you apply for funding, you write a script. But I had a hunch, and I think my hunch is right, that if I would have just written a script, it would be very difficult to kind of visualize it. So I made an animated storyboard, like an animatic, completely with the sounds that I just ripped off the internet and just put them on there and tried to find the right rhythm. And when I finally made the final film, it's basically exactly the same as the animatic, but of course with finished graphics. So.
Yeah, I think you would have to be right, because when we read a screenplay, we'd start directing the film. We project it on a screen, yeah, exactly, in our mind. And there was no way with words, unless you made it completely boring,
to say, okay, terribly boring.
We pan straight left four, and we see these things going by, and there's depth and text. Like, there's no way to use words to express.
I tried to do it, but I just, and we have to apply a screenplay. But I wrote at the top of the screenplay, please just first watch the animated storyboards and then read the screenplay if you want, because this won't translate. You won't see the film in your head unless you see.
Because you'll start in your mind. You automatically start editing and you start cutting.
Exactly.
And you start doing a close up on a boy and it's just such a beautiful balance between content and form, where it's beautiful form and beautiful content.
Exactly.
And my last praise. I might praise some more after this, but I also love that there's a slight element of magical realism in it, with the way key pieces of paper fly and float in ways that, you know, obviously could not happen. The whole story is very realistic.
Yes.
But then we have that sort of magical piece of whether it's a 20 pound or dollar bill, whatever it was. well, I read the English subtitles, so words $20. Yeah. But whether it's a dollar bill, like sticking to a post for a good 5 minutes, or obviously the drawing of the girl floating around was just so powerful.
Yes, these are just like little, I wanted to also kind of connect the beginning with the ending, because at the ending, when you see the girl waiting one last time, this drawing passes in the background. So I wanted to just, it was a way to connect beginning and ending. And also with the music, actually, the music of the beginning when the boy wakes up is the same music as the final close-up of the other boy, the second one. So I wanted to, it's like it has an A-B-A structure. Like,
Yeah. And again, more praise, because it's I find it brilliant, because also the second boy, and of course they're probably teenagers, probably young men, whatever you want to call them, but they, he has managed to sort of shut it out of his mind. Right. Like most of us, we pass by something tragic and we feel something for a moment and then we're over.
Yeah.
And then him looking out and him putting together why that girl is on the phone saying, "Where are you?" And then the animation's beautiful. The artwork is beautiful, because that very still face shows us that he is putting together. And I assume he's thinking about, do I go down there?
That's what I wanted to leave in the middle. Like, it's just, I just.
Yeah, because what would any of us do in that situation? Who wants to breathe? It's such a morally complex situation created.
It is. I don't, and to be honest, I don't know what the boy would do even after the film is over. I have no idea. I think the most important thing was to give the impression that something is brewing in his mind, that something kind of maybe a new feeling that he's never felt before is kind of for the first time in his life entering his mind, something like that. So kind of an awakening, if you will.
Right. Like almost a coming of age moment right there.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Wonderful. Well, so if we were doing a Q&A kind of thing with an audience, obviously someone would ask, even though this podcast isn't always Q&A-ish, but I'm jumping on the moment. so how long does a project like this end up taking you? And
oh, this took a long time. I think a year and a half, something like that, or maybe even a little bit more. Between a year and a half and 2 years, I worked on this. Yes.
And is it it's a frame by frame, a couple other bringing on other animators to help, or are you doing it all?
As a matter of fact, the animation of the boys, except when they're in close-up, were done by two other great animators that I've always worked with. They're both called Peter, by the way. of course, there's I did the compositing myself, but there was another compositor who did the basis of this camera movement, which was also great to have. So a very small team. And then, of course, there's post-production. The composer, Ruben, who's brilliant, and sound designer, Samuel Janssen, who's also one of the top sound designers in Belgium, did an amazing job. And editing was the easiest thing, obviously, in this film. So that wasn't too hard.
But a year and a half for essentially a 16-minute film.
Yes. Which is one of the problems, of course, of animation.
If you care enough to be doing, it's your standards that make you work so hard, I assume.
It is, but I still think it's one of those key problems that needs to be solved somehow in animation. Like if we can make the process faster, I think more interesting films will be seen, especially in feature film. I think this is money and time. Those are the two big hurdles that need to be taken, I think. But for my next film, I'm doing a different kind of animation technique that has the same graphical style, but is at least 10 times faster. So it's going to be interesting.
And is that based on new tools being developed, or you're learning more efficient ways to accomplish it?
It's actually more the tools. Yeah, there's some AI animation involved, artificial intelligence doing part of the animation that I'm basically doing the keyframes, and there's IA software that interpolates the other frames.
Yeah, which is very cool. Yeah, I'm so glad those tools are out there, because I know I think most of us are fascinated by animation, right? Because it's what they show us first as children. So
yes,
I do recall, like, you know, reading articles about, you know, a Pixar film where they're like, the algorithm we developed to do fur, like the we multiplied the number of hairs flowing individually with this algorithm, and like someone they have the money to create a tool to suddenly have realistic fur on a character, whereas
which doesn't even have to be animated anymore. It's just all physics based, and it's amazing what you can do now.
It's amazing. So I'm glad there's tools filtering down so that you can use something so you're doing keyframes, and then it's filling in the gaps for you.
Yes. But, and very consistently keeping the style, and we did some tests, and they're really good, actually.
Yeah. That must've been very exciting.
It was just accidentally. I just kind of saw this piece of software. It's free software, actually. Just tried it out, and it works great. Like I did continuous tests during 1 week, and I had like 1 minute of animation, which is insane for one person alone.
Right, because normally you'd be used to like, okay, I just worked for a week, so I have 4 seconds.
Yeah, I think so. I heard somewhere that like a Pixar level animator does like five, six seconds a day. But that's like the top animators.
Yeah. And if I did the math, let's see, I can't do 90 times 60 times 60 in my head, but there's a lot of seconds in a feature film.
So. Yes. Yeah. So I hope, like, this is my hope, that these new technologies will kind of allow people to make more daring films for less money, so they need less.
And is that your goal? Are you, so the next one is you said it's based on a novella?
Well, I'm working on two things now. One is a long shot. The other one is this short 20-minute film that is based on a novella, which I will know, I think, in January or February if that is greenlit or not. But then there's another project I'm doing, which is actually a feature, which is ridiculous. But hey, if you don't try.
Obviously, I was going to ask you if you've got a feature or three in the back of your mind that you're just waiting for the tools to make it feasible.
Well, we're writing. I and a friend of mine are writing. Well, mostly the friend of mine, who's a brilliant writer, actually is turning. It's also based on a novel, and he's turning it into an amazing script, which is deviating a lot from the novel, but it's such an amazing script. I love it. So I just hope I can one day using these tools to quickly animate and make a feature film, hopefully one day, that is really just like an animated film for adults and not even a family movie. It's really aimed at adults, formally and content wise. So,
I mean, I can't help but think that if it Lord knows getting films to audiences is not an easy task, but I believe that adults are fully ready for it, especially if you consider in the last, I mean, actually, I could date myself a little. I was a university, I was my first year of university when The Simpsons appeared on the Tracy Ullman show.
The Simpsons,
and
amazing.
Since then, there's a lot of animation on television geared only for adults.
True. Yeah.
And at some point, they've got to realize, grown-ups are drawn to it as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think it's in one way, there's a positive kind of threat, but there's also a negative one in the sense that less and less people go to the theaters. It's more streaming now, which is, I guess, okay. But at the same time, I feel it's more difficult today to get a film seen by audiences because there's just so much, and there's social media. There's so much things to do.
I agree with you. It's the feature film is a special creature that I think we all care about.
Yes.
And at the same time, in this world of a billion hours of streaming that you can watch, we've gotten this weird habit of, I am reminded of a meme where it shows a person sitting at their TV, and I think Netflix is on the screen or something, and it says, "You want me to watch a 2-hour movie? Forget you. Oh, you want me to watch 8 1-hour episodes in one night? I'm in."
Exactly. It is strange. Specifically for me, because I'm not like a series guy. I don't like. I do like series. I just don't watch them because I have a list of films I still have to watch. But the thing with streaming, I think, also is it is actually very close to classical TV in the sense that you can zap away if you don't like something. You're not committed to something. So if a film starts slow, for example, I think a lot of people have a tendency to just zap to another film. Or the way people consume movies is different. It's changing. And not always in a good way, I think.
Oh, it's such a... there was a film submitted... Oh, now I can't remember which it was, but there was a film submitted to our most recent Sherman Oaks Film Festival. So the one... Mm-hmm. Actually, we're speaking 2 weeks after a festival, so I've got it on my mind. And the first frame of the film was just a title card that said, "Put down your phone and turn it off. And turn off the ringer and watch this film," because the zapping, right? The zapping will often happen because, you get a text or an email pops up, and if I look at the screen of my phone while a film is playing, or TV for that matter, or a series, I'm sucked away. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons why I don't even own a smartphone. I have like a classic cell phone. Like it's just,
you got
to
flip it. Flips open.
It's not even a flip one. It's like one of these things.
Oh,
and I am the only one of my friends who doesn't have a smartphone. I just kind of refuse to get one.
Yeah, no, for those, because this is all audio, I'll just share with everybody. Peter just held up what looks like an old school Nokia phone that remember when you, in order to text, you had to hit like the 4-3 times to get to another letter. Like you've
exactly.
I have much praise to you for not having one of these beasts. Because, and now I just held up my iPhone, which I am tethered to like an infant to its mother's breast. It's just sad, but
well, it's
that must keep you more productive.
Well, it is. There was a period when I didn't have this phone, and I had a smartphone for a short while, and my production just halved. I was just constantly checking, is there news? Am I missing something? Constantly. And now I'm just, when I work, I can just completely disappear into the work for like 5 hours straight. It's no problem. So for me, it's great. But I guess you just have to learn to work these things or to not get distracted by them.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I'll add, we're on Zoom and I can see something beautiful behind you, which is shelving with CDs on it.
The CDs, DVDs, yes. I
CDs, DVDs, but physical media. So yeah, you are a refreshing Luddite, someone who is not. I love that you're jumping on new technology for your art, but and your filmmaking, but in your personal life, you're holding steady so that you can, I guess, keep the innovation to the art.
I think it's one of my weaknesses. When I see a movie I love, I need to own it. I just have to own it. And I rewatch a lot of movies actually. I think that I more or less watch one movie a day. Sometimes I skip a day, but that's all I watch. I don't watch anything else. And I think half of the films I watch are rewatching. So I just love rewatching the film back.
That is actually, I do. I have said that to people recently that I think I said it at the festival that one of the things I love about the festival is I see everything and then I see it again at the theater.
Yeah.
And seeing a film for a second time is always so revelatory that you just learn so much more about how you feel about it and how it touches you. And seeing a story for a second time and seeing the way it's made a second time. And we used to do that all the time when we had physical media because we had physical media. And when you're like, you would even go back to the video store. And if you saw, I'm old enough. So I'm older than you. So I'm used to a VHS. I actually never really got into DVD but you would even rent the same film again because you'd be like, I feel like watching that again. And the tape is right there on the wall. And I'm going to take that one home with something else.
I love it. Yeah.
And now with streaming, no one streams something a second time.
That's the impression I get, at least. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. By the way, I'm old enough as well to go to the video store and rent VHS, which was amazing. Like, and also like the cover art and like the there was the horror section in the back, and that was amazing. Had great cover art that never matched the movie inside, and it was just amazing. I have great nostalgic feelings for those times.
For sure. Well, here's a funny question: Do you have a Laserdisc player that actually works?
I do. I have.
I have one friend who has one that works.
Yeah, me too. It's a Pioneer. It still works. I don't have a lot of Laserdiscs, so I have like 6 or 7.
The exciting thing about my friend's Laserdisc player and collection is that he has the original theatrical Star Wars trilogy. Not the special edition where they added all the flaws of the original theatrical version is on that Laserdisc, and it's beautiful.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's just a shame that that's the only way to you could watch it now. Basically, that's.
Yeah, I still don't understand why Disney doesn't say, "Oh, you know what? There's at least 5-10 million nerds out there who want to watch the theatrical version.
Exactly.
We'll add it in addition to these redone digitized versions."
For example, yeah, I think George Lucas doesn't want it. I think maybe it's just. I read an interview somewhere where I don't know how you call it, but they wanted to take the first Star Wars movie and what do you call it, National Congress or something, I don't know, like turn it into something historical. I don't know what it is in America, but there's some.
Right, like almost copyrighted or.
Yeah, no, like there's like things that are like officially called a piece of American art.
Right, right.
I don't know, and so they have to provide an original copy of the original Star Wars on the 1978, was it? I don't know.
Yeah, 77, I think.
77, yeah. And George Lucas basically said, "Oh, that doesn't exist anymore. It's gone." Like, this is the only version that exists now.
Yeah, I think he's lying.
Do you mean, like, does it physically not exist anymore? Like, just what does that even mean?
He just, his aesthetic is different from ours, and we love that original version. And when there's TIE fighters and there's a slight white square around them as they move, that and exactly. To him, that's the worst thing he's ever seen, and he hates it. And to me, it's the difference between listening to an LP and hearing a crack and a pop and loving it.
Yes.
And listening to an MP3 and enjoying the music. But there's something less analog, less human about it.
I completely understand what you're saying. Yes, I have the same thing. I need that. I need the film grain also, which is not completely filtered out. I just need that 70s look. That I miss it, but.
Well,
can you do?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe when he passes, then they'll do it. They'll give us back, because I mean, talk about an opportunity to just acknowledge the historical importance of those,
exactly.
You know, first, whatever. We don't have to talk about Star Wars. This is your podcast. So I'm glad to hear you have these things brewing. Is there anything else like worth sharing or that you'd like to share? Are you,
No, well, I could say that, and I am also working on a game.
Oh, really? Like a parlor game?
What do you mean, like a parlor?
A game that people play together, or
no, like a video game?
Oh, video game.
Yeah, like a side scroller video game. So this is I see a lot of people from animation also. Moving into that territory, so that's also a thing I'm working on.
That'd be very cool.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a challenging to get my graphics to work real time in a game engine, but after months we finally found a way to do it. And, yeah, it's exciting. Also,
yeah, I keep the other animators I've had the pleasure of talking to, at least two of them. One uses an animation engine that, like, the Apple developed, and then the other uses Unreal Engine or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the crossover between video game and animation. I mean, it's the same. It's the same. It's the same. It's animation.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And a lot of these game engines are used for classical, you know, like you said, because. They are a lot faster. You can do things in real time. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we should be grateful that I think I have no idea the numbers, but I know that the video game industry is about 100 times bigger and more profitable than film. Like the biggest video game of the year takes in $10 billion and the biggest film of the year takes in $1 billion. And we think the film is more important than the video game. But yeah, the video game...
Yeah.
The finances of it, I guess, are why they're able to develop such amazing tools.
I guess so, yeah. I guess so. And a lot of these video game tools are used in, for example, I haven't watched any of those, but one of the Star Wars spin-off series. I think it was The Mandalorian. Uses Unreal Engine, I think, to project backgrounds live. They don't use a green screen anymore. They just in real time project backgrounds on a set, which they can just manipulate in real time, which is amazing, I guess.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Well, it's exciting. You're in a very promising position, I would hope.
I hope. I don't know. You never know. Never.
Yeah, you're never. You're bridging the world between being a fine artist in the cinema medium and then dipping your toe into the game world and the digital animation world, all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And deep down, you're a storyteller, I think.
Yes and no. I'm always kind of interested in the least amount of story you need to make a film. That's what I'm interested in. I would never want to make a film where the story kind of blows away the audiovisual experience. I would still rather make something that is endlessly rewatchable rather than something that ends with or something that is purely plot driven. I'm not that interested to make these things. I love watching those films, but that's not what I'm interested in. So, and I think even The Passerby is like basically a very simple story. It's kind of a simple story. I mean, the way it is told, it kind of elevates it, but it's nothing out of the ordinary, unfortunately, happens.
Yeah. Although I think a response as a fan of the film is that it is a very simple story, mm-hmm. but that simple story has layers of depth to it that many don't.
Like that's what I'm interested in. Yeah, a lot more interested than you know, 25 plot points and
and throwing in 20 characters all trying to the overwhelming interconnecting plot point films that are sometimes fun.
Of course, I love them a lot of times, but I don't. My brain doesn't work like that. My brain thinks in images, and you can give me an amazing script, but if I don't see the images, I'm not going to do it. It's like I need a form in order to make a film. Like I need to find the right form, otherwise I'm not doing it.
I appreciate that. And of course you're telling the stories visually. I don't think this won't be a spoiler. One of my favorite, something that just stands out to me is the last time the second boy rides his bicycle past the scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You bring us in tight on the bicycle wheel.
Yes.
And we just go by. And that's what an effective way to say at this point, he's shutting his eyes. He's disconnecting from what he's seen. And you just bring the audience. You just tell us all we're seeing now. We know what we're passing, but we're not even going to look at it anymore.
Exactly. That's very well put.
Well, what can I say? I watched it yesterday and just could not believe. I was like, wow, this thing. Why is this film not... you know, I would hope I'm a fan of some of the animation anthologies on streaming. I know Netflix has that.
I've heard
Deaf and Robots.
Yes. Haven't seen it, but I've heard
it's, the last, I think there's been three seasons and each season has gotten better as they've improved and brought in more people. Mm-hmm. Because obviously one team can't make 8 great films a year or every other year. It's gotten better and more impressive, which is wonderful. And Lord knows if they saw The Passerby, they just might I would love for them to throw a chunk of money at you and say, give us one, give us a story.
That would be amazing.
Devin sucks about having a big suitcase of money flown in and dropped on your doorstep.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah, that very rarely happens, but...
doesn't happen much. But if they saw it, if they saw what you do, you know, it's, I don't know. What kind of fools would they be not to... Because I'll just say that yours, they... Not every film on that series has an amazing aesthetic to me, but at least half do, and they are very different from each other.
And yeah, an animation that's there's a lot of diversity in films.
So. Oh, there's so many. It's limitless.
It is limitless. Yeah,
I think even as something as rudimentary as South Park taught us that even if it looks rudimentary, like. You know, they obviously stopped doing the paper cutouts after the first season, but even if it's that simple, they're able to have aliens from outer space and go to other worlds. They can do anything they want because it's not in the real world and it's limitless. What even that show, they do wildly experimental things.
Yeah, exactly. Now, wouldn't it be great if you get that kind of diversity in feature films animation? That would be amazing.
Well, I'll cross my fingers that the tools arrive, you know, make it all possible.
Yes, me too.
Because I think you're right. It's the time and the money required that always forces it to be lowest common denominator.
Exactly.
Family film, get as many. And Lord knows, Disney learned a long time ago that children will be like, I want to watch Frozen 3 times a day for a year. No matter what the parents think.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, to be honest. To be completely honest, haven't seen it.
You know, it's not bad. We had a little girl when it came out, so, you know, it was at least nice that it took a few steps towards women not being so reliant on men. But
Yeah.
But it's not a brilliant film, it's nice.
Okay. Maybe I'll watch it someday.
I don't know, I wouldn't put it too high on your list. Well, I'm kind of excited to get to the next podcast because I've got a filmmaker who owns a Laserdisc player that works. So hearing you answer those 4 questions, I think is going to be kind of fun. Is there a social media or I guess you probably, do you do any of that?
I'm on Facebook. I do have a website, which is just myname.com.
Yourname.com. All right. I'll put that in the show notes since I won't even bother spelling it, but it's easy enough to add .com to it. So yes, everyone listening, if you think I'm crazy, just go to Peter's website by tapping on it in the show notes on your smartphone or on the web, and you'll see Peter's website and just see the quality of the artwork is just it's beautiful. In fact, I probably won't be the first person to say if you did certain stills from the passerby and sold them in an art gallery or, you know, I love to go to art galleries and art walks. Some of it's just so beautiful. I bet you could sell it as art.
Well, I've actually been playing with the idea to kind of illustrate a little bit more. I would love to kind of illustrate a book, but I don't think in those terms. So probably be somebody else's story that I would love to illustrate. That's one of the things on my bucket list, illustrates.
Excellent. That would be amazing. All right, well, we've got your website now, and I will rattle off a couple websites and social media handles all the while looking over at my cell phone that's on Do Not Disturb and thinking, I should spend less time on you. But everyone listening, thank you for listening to the Discover Indie Film podcast. This podcast did give birth to a TV series on Amazon Prime Video. So if you want to learn more about either the podcast or the TV series, you can go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And if you want to watch at this point, when this comes out, I think there'll be 7 seasons of the Discover Indie Film TV series. So you just go to Prime Video, hopefully on a big, beautiful 4K TV, and you open your Prime Video app and you type in Discover Indie Film. It'll auto-complete at some time and enjoy short films that were handpicked from the festival circuit. Please support indie filmmakers and artists who are making stuff for the right reasons, just because their souls demand they put in the work, because No one makes a short film thinking, this is my ticket to a big house. It just doesn't happen. So that's Discover Indie Film. I'll also mention The Passerby won those awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that festival every November. So you can learn more if you go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And finally, there is a sister festival, Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about that if you go to FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. Peter, thank you so much.
It was great.
This was a pleasure to finally talk to you, and I'm going to hit stop, and then we're just going to record again, and you'll tell me your answers for those four questions. I assume you've got them a little thought out. I didn't send you a second reminder that I was going to ask these, but it's for those still listening, he'll tell us three of his favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, something lesser known to seek out. So we have a genuine cinephile on our hands, which is always exciting. Someone who still watches movies. Shocks me the number of people who make films and don't watch them.
I don't get that.
I don't get it either. I don't know why the film festival, when we hold a film festival for a week, that every filmmaker isn't attending every screening. I'm like, why wouldn't you want to see what your peers are doing? But
I'm completely drained after each film festival. I watch them.
Wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And thank you everyone for listening.